They told me to qualify briefly, and I'm an alcoholic. My nature was to drink, and I guess cause turmoil. And but you know, I'm just like I said last week. I'm just so grateful, you know, to identify with self-centeredness and do something about it, and see that self-righteousness that I truly believe is the heartbeat of self-centeredness. And that self-righteousness was that self-centered ego that led to jealousy and resentment. And then along with that, the next step was hate and anger, and then the turmoil. And finding a way not to go to jail anymore. You know, I had a judge tell me, you know, don't you think it's, I see you here all the time, man. She said, I know you're starving. I said, yeah, I am. And but ever since then, I've been, my dad died of this disease also, you know, and seeing him die of alcoholism changed my ways. I said, I don't want to die like that. So I did everything I could to try not to go down that same road he went down, you know. And it's been a blessing to be an alcoholic, and I must find a way out of that shit, you know. And yeah, we're all going to die, you know, but I don't want to die of alcoholism, you know. And I'll have to die in prison or anything like that. Because it's a miracle. Only by the grace of God that I'd ever made it there. And for all the drugstores we broke into. And back in those days. And all the drugs I really did. I just don't know why I'm still living today. And so that's why I truly believe in, there is a God, you know, that sees over us all and loves us all. And he's the only one that's going to release self-centeredness, give us a chance to grasp and develop a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty, and but most of all, you know, to be able to help someone else. Because I truly believe the newcomer is the most important person in this room. And that's enough out of me. And a reminder, the group asked me to remind you. Oh yeah, I know I messed up on this. It's like, you know, I'm going to read these announcements. If you park in the parking lot next door in any area not designated, you will be towed. The group conscious meeting is the first Sunday of the month immediately following the 10 a.m. meeting. See the chairperson or birthday board for instruction on birthday and silver dollars. AA literature can be purchased at the coffee bar, and there are free brochures available in the corner, right there. And please respect the others. Please respect one another on the club's property. And please restrain from moving around or talking while people are sharing and texting, leaning back in chairs, or using profanity during the meeting. Thank you. And are there any more announcements?
All right. October 27th at the Halloween party. Your group sponsored it every year, and this year is going to be at the Redeemer Lutheran Church from 5 to 12. More will be revealed in the next couple of weeks.
Thanks.
Hi, I'm Renee, grateful for covering alcoholics.
Hi, Renee.
And over at the Center for Drug Free Living on Rio Grande, Michigan, there is a meeting Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. table talk, and we could really use your support there.
All right, thanks very much. I'll be there next Saturday. I'll be there. Any more announcements?
I'm Robin. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Robin.
The third Sunday in September is the Central Picnic, and their sign-up sheet, start looking, should be coming up soon.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Sounds good. That sounds like a lot of fun, yeah? Okay. It says here, introduce the speaker. And, you know, I call her Mo. And I know I miss her. I used to always enjoy, you know, God works in mysterious ways. I didn't know. I seen Mo and one day going to a wedding and ask her to, if she would speak, you know, and she said, yes, she would. And I was really, really happy and excited because I always liked what she always had to say, you know. And through that time, you see people grow. And help you to understand a few things too, you know. And that's what Mo did to me. Seeing her come you know how I was, wouldn't hug nobody, wouldn't handshake nobody, and want nothing to do with anybody, and come on to that, you know, and on the other side, you know, and to where you you want to give everybody a hug, you know, even the ones that complain, you know. So at this time, I'd like to introduce Mo.
Hi, I'm Mo. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
my sobriety date is September 13th, 2005, and I'm grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous and to my higher power for that. It's truly, I feel truly blessed. And when Ray asked me to speak, I was very excited about it. I was like, yes, because I got sober here in these rooms. And it's like coming home. You know, I have a home group in Fort Pierce where I live now. But, you know, trying to not compare it to Central was challenging, you know. And AA is pretty much the same message over there as it is here. But it's my willingness to hear it that changes. Tonight I'm going to talk about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. God, it's so great to see so many people that I haven't seen in a long time. What it was like. Well, I had the isms as a little kid. I'm 6 feet tall, a little taller with heels tonight, but always very tall. Felt very uncomfortable with that, very awkward. Didn't feel like I fit in with my peers. I was the youngest of five, and so I felt like I didn't get enough love from my parents because we were treated like, you know, the bus is leaving in 5 minutes, and you know, you got to manage five kids with a lot of order, and I took that as not enough love. But I know today that even if my parents did nothing but tell me how wonderful I was and how much they loved me, I wouldn't have believed it because I never felt that I was lovable. Always felt less than, and just uncomfortable in my own skin. As the youngest of five, my parents pretty much told me what I was going to do, what sports, what activities, and what I will study, and where I'll go to school. And I'm grateful for that because it was very good, orderly direction. Kept me out of trouble for a while. you know, and it gave me some self-esteem, you know, to set goals and achieve them and learn how to take care of myself physically and all the fun things that sports teach you. Anyway, as I got older, well, I grew up in a home where there was a lot of alcohol. I was affected by alcohol long before my first drink, and I was surrounded by it. So when I started getting older, it wasn't a question about, you know, you want a glass of wine or, you know, have a sip here or whatever, and it was never questioned. So you know, there are alcoholics all over my family tree. Some, you know, and I can't diagnose them, but some self-proclaimed, self-diagnosed alcoholics are in my family. And so why it took me 35 years to figure this out, I don't know. but when I did, the alcoholics that are in recovery definitely came forward and were like, good for you, you know, and it was a surprise. Anyway, so let's see. My drinking really was, it helped me to be, I know this is hard to believe, but I used to be very shy, and alcohol helped me to not be shy. It helped me to be more social and feel good in my skin. It was my first higher power, and it was it worked for me for a long time, and if it worked for me today, I'd probably still be drinking, but that's not the case. It started as fun in college, binge drinking, weekend drinking, but I was able to pass my classes and work and do what I needed to do. As I got older, you know, I realize now from working the steps that, again, I did what was suggested for me to do because I had no idea what I wanted to do when I grew up. So I graduated from college, and I'm like, what do I do now? With a very, very helpful degree in art history. Very, very marketable. Thank you. Yeah. anyway, so I took direction, and the reason that I did was I would ask my parents, like, well, what do you think I should do? And then I found out that they were responsible for the choices if it didn't go well, but I was responsible for it if it did go well. So I put my parents in a very bad position time and time again, where they were responsible for my life and not me. And I'm grateful today for my sponsor and for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 Steps, that I don't have to do that today. And my relationship with my parents is much better because they don't have that kind of pressure on them. They want to see me do well. They love me. And I have, you know, I got to grow up, put the big girl pants on, you know, and start making decisions. Anyway, so I moved to Orlando after floundering for a couple years after college. And I was in sales, and I did very well at it. I was able to, you know, put on that front that we alcoholics have, that double life, where I looked nice on the outside and I could present myself as a normal person, but nothing about me felt normal. If anybody got in between me and a drink, they were gone. I had people, you know, over to the house and they'd look in the fridge and there was nothing but alcohol in the fridge, and if they looked sideways at me about it, they were out, you know, no questions asked. So as a result of my great negotiation skills and putting alcohol first, my life started to turn into like Teflon. Relationships, men, money, jobs, nothing stuck around. So I've never been married, don't have any children, and that's, you know, a consequence of being completely self-centered to the extreme. And now that all that business is in God's hands, because I can't deal with that anymore. all I can do is one day at a time, apply the principles the best I can, and trust God. You know, trust God, clean house, help others. That's kind of the motto that I do today. I didn't always do that. So anyway, the drinking started taking its toll, where I was starting, my health was failing, losing jobs, money problems, you know, all that. So I got a roommate, and I couldn't do the jobs, the nice sales jobs that I'd had. So I started working a series of part-time jobs, and with that came, you know, 6-7 days a week, long hours, very unbalanced. And I did that for years. And I believe that my self-centered fear and my anger and frustration were the fuel for that. It wasn't that I was exceptionally hyper or, you know, had a lot of energy. I just, a lot of fear, a lot of anger. And I used to wake up crying every morning going, oh God, not another day. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. And I never, you know, I didn't want to stop drinking, because I would drink only at night after my ridiculously long days. And when I came into the program, I didn't know that I was an alcoholic, because I didn't drink 24/7. I didn't drink first thing in the morning. But it took me a while to figure out that actually I was acutely intoxicated 24/7 based on the insane amounts that I was drinking in a very short period of time. Oh, by myself, because at that point I was not fit to be in public. Bad things happened when I went out drunk, you know, and in my drinking, I had three different groups of friends, you know, the presentable ones, the business friends, and I had to, you know, look like a lady and act like a lady, you know. And then there were the, you know, the people that drank like I did, that anything went, you know. And then I had another group of friends. So it was like, depending on who I wanted to be or how I wanted to drink, I would hang out with those people. And that's part of the insanity of this disease. I would drink before I would go out drinking so that I could go out and have a couple drinks and not have people question it, and then go home and drink the way I wanted to. So there are all these games going on. And that's how alcohol kind of became the center of my world, and I didn't know that. My mind just got totally wrapped around that, because that's the only time that I felt good, when I was drunk. Anyway, so this went on for a while, and then my mom got sick. She had stage 3, I think it was, metastasized colon cancer. She's okay today. She survived, but she's recovered. But she decided that she wanted to go on a trip before she, you know, because we didn't know if she'd live. And so she said, you know, let me take you to Tuscany. And it doesn't matter where I don't think it matters where a person is at. I was in one of the most beautiful places in the world, and that's where I started hitting bottom. I was in Chianti country, and there wasn't enough Chianti to help that problem. Well, and that's another thing that I learned about when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had never, I didn't try to stop once I started, you know, that allergy would just kick in, and I would just drink the way I wanted to, and drink enough to be acutely intoxicated all day long. And so when I went to Tuscany with my mom on a small bus in a small room for 10 days, and I didn't have the alcohol to help my anger and frustration, I was irritable, restless, discontent. That would be untreated alcoholism. And I'm grateful for that, because even though I don't know that I would have come into Alcoholics Anonymous when I did had that not happened, because my whole world was around alcohol. I didn't have to worry about running out of alcohol. Everything was about that. And so it was a gift. I'm sorry that I was not a very nice travel companion for my mother, but today she forgives me, and you know, and she understands what a beautiful gift it was and how that was God working in my life and in hers. So I came home, and that's when I crossed over that line that I heard a lot of people talking about in speaker meetings. And I absolutely could not stop drinking once I started. And the amounts escalated. I shouldn't be here today. I don't know how I didn't poison myself or end up hospitalized. And so I called one of my employers, and I said, you know, oh, I need help due to stress-related issues with aging parents. And because I was going to tell them I'm drunk. And they said, that's nice. You're not fit for your job to work with the people that I work with, so you're suspended until you get a medical clearance. And so I went to the doctor and gave the same story, got the medical clearance, and that's when I hit the wall, and I went, wait a minute. If I'm drinking till 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, 11 to 2, and I have to be at work at 7:30 in the morning, that's where the drunken state became the normal state. And I didn't know that till I came in and, you know, started listening to other people. Because I didn't think that that was me, that I didn't think I was an alcoholic. So I realized that I can't work anymore without, because now I'm on the radar, and I know that they're going to drug test me randomly, and I'm not going to pass for alcohol. I didn't do drugs. I did those 100 years before, and I found out that I just like alcohol. I don't care about drugs, never did. All alcohol. So I called a friend who had done some 12-step work with me years before. I was a sales rep, and I called her, and to date, she's bought nothing from me. But I've bought a lot of things from her. I don't know. But it was her AA birthday, and she was like, oh, today I'm, and I don't remember the number, but it was something like 15 years. It could have been 500 years for all. I was like, what? Why would you quit, you know? And it was years later when I realized that I had a problem that I called that lady up, and she recommended a therapist, and I got who was also in the program. And the therapist, I got honest with her, and I told her what I was doing, and I don't know why I did that. I guess because I knew I was dying, and I was at the end of the road, and I had nowhere to go. If I thought that I could continue drinking, I would, but I couldn't. So I came in, and I did what she suggested, one meeting a week for 7 months. I would not recommend that for anybody. No. Went to the women's meeting, and I'm grateful for that suggestion. It kept me out of trouble. But I walked into this room, and I saw these women that glowed from the inside out, and they were so happy, and they were hugging each other and loving each other, and I was like, oh, gross, you know? No, this isn't going to work, because I hated women, because if they were anything like me, they were not to be trusted, you know, not very nice in general. Today I know that that's not true. So if you're new and you don't like women or women's meetings and you're a woman, know that you're not alone and you're not unique in that, that was me too. And some of those women saved my life, and they loved me until I could love myself. And for that, I'm eternally grateful. And it's like, whoo, when I see them, it's like, oh, you know, like no time has passed, because we're connected, like, on a much deeper level than I'd ever been to anybody, even including my family. So, long story short, I'm now super sober at 7 months dry, one meeting a week, and decided I'm ready for a boyfriend. bad. He didn't act the way I thought he should, and he didn't treat me the way I thought he should, so I realized at that point what they tell me, what I heard in the meetings, which is resentment is our number one offender, and I was so mad at him. And I stayed mad for like, I don't know, 10 days straight. I was just so mad. It's that obsession. Like, everything went back to all the horrible things that I'd like to have happen to him. And, I know, nice. And it ended up that I got desperate. I must have heard it in a meeting that if you get, if you're resentful or angry at anybody, for whatever reason, pray for them, because it's like hating them and hope, and me drinking and hoping that they die. And that's when I realized that why I drank, because I was like, I need a drink. And I was like, no, I don't. That's it. So I came to a meeting and I found my first sponsor. She was going through some stuff and knew the value of service that was taught to me here. She knew that, and she taught me that by working with another alcoholic, she got out of herself and out of her problems so she could think about mine, which I was pretty much a soup sandwich when I got here, total mess, angry and very sad, very lonely. Like, I think that other alcoholics understand that loneliness, you know. So she walked me through the steps, and I wanted to go through them like now, you know, not really patient, and she just was amazing and helped me to understand what the Big Book was saying and to go to Big Book meetings and talk to me and help me to go through the steps at my pace. And anyway, I ended up, long story short, having to move out of Orlando for a job, and it was a wonderful thing that happened to me. I learned what self-centered fear is like without a higher power. I learned about not sharing. I learned about not working with others and getting twisted around the axle, you know. I learned that my disease is always looking for a way in. It just doesn't stop. So if I'm not progressing in my recovery, then I know that I too am eligible to drink. And I don't want to do that today, because I came in, I have one white chip, and I didn't pick it up till I was 9 months, because my pride wouldn't let me. But I believe and I see when other people go out, you know, and I believe when the Big Book says that basically jails, institution, and death are there for me too. I'm eligible for that. I've not had any of those experiences, although I should have had many of them. So my sponsor said, you know, got me into service, and I've always had a service commitment until recently, and I'm almost 7 years sober. And that really helps. So this year has been a wild, wild ride. It's been a year where, you know, they say at 5 years you get your marbles back and it takes you another five to learn how to play with them. That's very true. Crazy. You know? And this year I've learned about my attachments to things outside of myself. You know, that big lie about if, and then a blank space, then I'll be okay. And I played that game for a long time. If this person does that, then I'll be okay. If my boss does this, then I'll be okay. And it led me to a place where I was just so sad. And there was a lot of losses this year. There was a relationship that ended. I was 3 years sober when we started dating, and that ended about a year ago. And wow, we can still be friends and not, like, I don't wish evil things on him most of the time. No, I'm just kidding. But we can be friends. My stepmother, who was like a mother to me, she's been around since I was 13, a very nurturing, sane woman, passed away from a long, nasty fight with breast cancer. And that was the first loss that I'd had of a close family member other than like a grandparent who's older. You know, she was too young to die. My cat got, you know, diagnosed with a terminal illness. He's still alive, but, you know, I mean, it's just so much loss. And I recently changed jobs. So it's just loss, loss, loss. And what I found was that no matter what, that if I stay God-centered, if I trust God and I help others to, you know, so that I get out of my own way, that there is joy and that it's in the now, right now. And I started this little exercise of staying in the minute, in the moment, right now, right now. And I found out that time disappears when I'm in the moment, and that's where joy is. And unfortunately, I'm late to everything now. Where I was, that used to drive me crazy, you know? Like, if people are late, I'm like, I expect you to be here. Expectations? No, not good. So, you know, those are some of the things that I looked at this year. And a lot of things were removed. We were not allowed to work late. There was a contract thing going on. And so where I would fill up my time with work, that was removed. And when that was removed, I went home. And I live in the boondocks, okay? They don't even have a Starbucks where I live, okay? Coming from downtown Orlando, that's tough. So it's always a treat to come here. I'm like, ooh, Starbucks. Ooh, they have a mall and a Barnes & Noble. Yay. But it was really quiet because I hadn't built a sufficient network because my boyfriend was pretty much my network. And I hadn't really built those friendships that I did early in sobriety. So where I live, a lot of people are married and their families. It's a very small little town, so there isn't a lot of the same kind of fellowship that I enjoyed here early in sobriety, where you can just show up and there's somebody hanging out outside and get a cup of coffee and, you know, hang out after the meeting. That it's a little different where I live. And so everything became deathly silent. There was no work to fill up the time. There was nothing to do. The house was clean, you know, dinner was made, and I'm sitting there twiddling my thumbs. And it is in that silence that the noise, you know, it's like the noise in my head, you know, and I had to work on that and work on getting back to a place of serenity that and getting comfortable in my own skin, because I was not that way. I had filled up the inside with my job. It wasn't the bottle this time, but I know that if I continue to rely on things outside of myself, like I did with alcohol, that all those things will lead me back to a drink. And I don't want to go there. I did not get dragged this far to be miserable, you know, and to live in fear and anger and frustration, and this disease wants me alone. It wants me to think that I'm less than. And so I started hanging out with an old timer who's retired, so we'd hang out on the beach a lot. And not as much as I needed. There were still a lot of hours that were really quiet. And I'm grateful for that, because he was talking to me about Alcoholics Anonymous and the disease and his experience and growing, and I could, you know, work through a lot of that stuff. And so when I finally started getting comfortable and not being like, he suggested that we go on a road. Well, actually, he was suggesting that there's a really cool place that he thought I might like to visit. A friend of his moved to a town in North Carolina. I've never been to North Carolina. So I'm like, oh, road trip? Okay, let's go. Why not? I got the summer off. Let's go. And we decided to call it a God trip. And there were some things going on with my employment in Fort Pierce. I do have a job for next year. But I changed jobs. And this is where the esteem comes from doing esteemable things. My boss wouldn't tell me how he wanted me to participate on the team next year, but he was considering moving me backwards professionally. And he wouldn't commit. And there was a deadline. Without going into the technical difficulties, essentially, he made a decision about my career and did not tell me what it was, because if he did, he knew that I would leave. So, and I know that he did this because we talked about it in a civil manner. Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous, that I didn't have a fit like a child. I could talk to him about that and say that's not right. And but I had also read the signs, and I was able to take action. And in the end, the deadline came and went, and within 7 minutes of the end of that business day, I informed him that I wasn't going to be on his team anymore, and I was going to a different business, a different place. And so he held me off for 6 months and or 6 weeks. And in the end, standing in that hallway, he's the one that got hurt. And I don't have to be angry about it. I do get angry sometimes. I'm like, God, how nasty. But then I remember the St. Francis prayer. Then I remember that how much fear does this person have to be in that they can't be honest about their decisions and allow me to move about my life, you know? And that, and then I just feel bad for him and I pray for him like, wow, that must stink to live in that skin. I know about that. I know how that feels. And but for the grace of God, I read the signs. I had the support from members of Alcoholics Anonymous talking about all these things. So on the road trip, I walk in, and I'm usually with work very, like, you know, detail-oriented with my little portfolio and, you know, all nice and, because I do that, you know, the outside always looks polished when it needs to be. And it wasn't. I walked into this school board in sneakers, shorts, hair in a ponytail, paper resume, no nothing, you know, no portfolio. And I'm like, hey, you're hiring people to do what I do? And they're like, no, go away. Fill out the online application. And I'm like, well, I saw that, but I have my paper application or my paper resume. Would you like to see it? They're like, no, we don't have a place for it. Go online. Goodbye. And I'm like, well, this is my specialty. And they go, oh, why didn't you say so? We just hired somebody that did what you did, that what you do yesterday. And I'm like, oh, missed it by a day. And then they go, well, hang on a second. So he takes me to the big boss. Big boss goes, that's interesting. You available tomorrow for an interview? And I'm like, yep. So I end up in this interview on this road trip. And no portfolio, no nothing, just very casual. And it's a dream job that I'm uniquely qualified for based on the things that I volunteered for fun and for free while I was employed with that other, in that other job last year. I took on responsibilities and I did things to get out of my own pain, right? Service work for the community that I was in, but it ended up making me uniquely qualified, and they were like very excited about it. I don't know what's going to happen because I just started my other job, my new job, and I'll know on Monday. And it's not up to me. And the thing is, instead of being like, oh, what if I did and I did do this right? And I'm like, God's in charge. And that's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I can do that today. And I don't have to freak out about it. I don't have to do anything. I pretty much just dressed up, showed up, and God took over. I would be shocked if I don't get the offer because of my ego, you know? Because it's me. Come on. But if I, you know, because when I was given the opportunity to create my higher power, I decided big neon signs and a good sense of humor was important. So I got that. Big neon signs, go here, go there, stop. I don't always hit, you know, pay attention to the stop signs, and then I pay for them dearly. But and then it's like going along, then right turn, Clyde, as a friend of mine would say. It's like going along, going that way. So I don't know what's happening. You know, I don't know where I'm going to be. And I was freaking out because Ray asked me to speak, and that was a couple months ago, and all of this came up in the last, week and a half. So for all I know, I could be moving to North Carolina in a week or two, or maybe not. And I don't have to have the outcome known. You know, I trust God, and it is God. And there are so many little synchronicities that let me know that. as a result of working the steps, as a result of having peace and serenity and a quiet mind, I can read the signs and go, instead of, ooh, I want that job, how about, God, let me be wherever I will be of maximum service. Bring me to where I'm supposed to be to help others. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Not about me, 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 me. And then me, and then after me comes me. But it's really scary, too. One of the synchronicities was we met a woman who was a friend of my buddy that we went on the road trip with. And she's having a hard time staying sober, so we spent the day with her and just brought her some joy, you know, eating fabulous creme brulee downtown.
Yum.
Good restaurants that don't exist where I live. This is, you know, big stuff. And she had joy, you know, and I took a picture of her at the end of the day, and it's like sharing that love, tolerance, hope, joy, energy, you know, patience with her, and it was so much fun. And after here's the weird part, right? After my interview, I said, if I get the job, where would you recommend that I look for a place to live? And they gave me a street, and it was the same street that this woman lived on. And it's like, it's a city. Like, what? Really? Does that stuff happen? Yeah, it does. And that's God going, hee hee, you know, like, I know where you know, like, just kind of pointing. And I can just kind of go with the flow with that, you know. And the radio in the car didn't work on the way up. 12 hours in the car talking to an old timer, an old crusty bat. Love you, Kevin. But, yeah, I call it to his face, so I can say that here. And I mean it as a term of endearment. His radio didn't work, so I was goofing around talking. It was basically a long AA meeting. And when he would start giving me a hard time, I'd start making turkey noises. And when we went to look at an apartment, there were 5 wild turkeys in the backyard. You know? So there's the sense of humor of my higher power. You know? And I am so excited about the journey, because I spent so much time in the last year just holding on so tight and so much fear, and that's the stuff that I drank over, you know? So even though the drinking problem isn't my problem today, if I don't stay honest and truthful to myself, if I'm not working these steps, if I'm not moving closer to God and being honest with myself and with everybody around me, I too will go back to drinking. I've seen that happen. And I don't want that today, you know. I see so many of the people that I got sober with that are not sober today, and it's so scary, because I know that, I mean, I really didn't, you know, these are suggestions, right? The steps are a suggestion, if you want to live, you know. that's my opinion. But I don't want to drink, because I know that to drink would be jail's institution and death. Or, if I do the steps and apply the principles, happy, joyous, and free. And if I'm somewhere in the middle, I'm holding on tight, and I'm not happy, and that's what my disease is doing. It's just waiting for that opportunity to climb in through the back window like a vapor, and just my ego just takes over and all the fear-based emotions, and then, you know, and I don't want to do that today, and I don't have to. I don't always know that, and that's why the people that I surround myself in the program are so important, you know. Because if I hang around people that want to entertain my complaining, then I'm going to get more complaining. And if I want solutions that are, you know, like, oh, let go, let God, all the slogans that AA has, think, 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 turn it over, all that stuff. If I don't listen to that and apply it, then, you know, then I'm moving closer to a drink, and I don't want to do that today. So it is a journey. If you're new, just keep coming back. I had no idea 7 years ago, coming back from Tuscany, that I would be able to go 7 years without a drink. I had no idea that I would be in Fort Pierce or possibly on my way somewhere else, and that it is all, it's fun. It can be fun when you just let go and let God. Anyway, I think that's pretty much all I got today. Thank you for letting me share.